Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Friday, August 15th, day number 217 of 2014. Tonight, we're going to catch up with a new friend of our show, Lorenzo Martinez, who just wrote a book called Cuba Adios. It's his story of coming to the United States, and we'll be, you know, we love these books. Every time I hear of a book like this, we always make an effort to bring the author to the show. These books are wonderful to just to let the young people know our story of how we came to the United States. So we'll be chatting with Lorenzo in just a minute. I mean, the book just literally came out, I think, in the last two or three days. So hopefully some of you will have a chance to see the link and order the book directly from Amazon. You know, we've been telling you about this company, Audible.com. They're actually an Amazon company, and they are your source for audiobooks. So if you've been looking for an audiobook, if you've been, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes to hear books rather than actually read them or Kindle or whatever the format, the paper or Kindle or whatever. If you like listening to your books, you may want to check out audible.com. We have a link to their website on the show information, so click on that. Take a look at their inventory. I mean, they have a fantastic inventory of books, and I'm sure there's something there for you, whether it's sports, romance, whatever it may be. I'm sure they have your book there in their inventory. On this day in history, now you've got to be old enough to remember this one, but on this day in history, 1969, the Woodstock Festival began in New York. So if you remember that, you'll know what I'm talking about. Woodstock, 1969. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Lorenzo right after this. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's say hello to Lorenzo Martinez. How are you, Lorenzo?
I am fine, thank you. Thank you, Silvio. Thank you for inviting me to your program.
Oh, it's a great honor.
I appreciate it.
The honor is mine, meeting another Cuban author. But, you know, you were telling me off the air that you have a musical background, so you must remember Woodstock.
Well, I have studied piano all my life. And in fact, before I left Cuba, I had a scholarship to study piano in Prague, but I had to give that up to come to the United States. So I was actually not too happy. I didn't want to come here because when I came, I had no scholarship, no money. I didn't know the language. So suddenly my whole world changed. Of course,
all
I'm
right.
Very happy that it did,
sure.
But at the time it was a little bit traumatic.
Yeah, but I don't think they were playing too much piano at Woodstock. So that was more crazy rock. I think if you had been a guitar player,
yes.
Maybe you would have appreciated it more. Well, I mentioned a couple of days that your book just came out. I mean, I've been reading your postings in Facebook that it just literally came out a couple of days ago, and it's called Cuba Adios, and I like that title a great deal. Now, you know, as I was saying in the introduction, I love these books because each one of them tells a story of each and every one of us who came here. So why did you write the book? I mean, I know you wrote it because you wanted to tell your story, but why now? I mean, why did you wait till now or any particular reason?
Well, you know, my mother died 5 years ago and the year before my father died. And I realized that with them, a lot of history went. And there is a new generation now. I don't have children, but I have nieces and nephews who really know very little about the Cuban immigration. They were born in this country, and I realized that whole part of my history will be lost unless I write about it. So that's what gave me the inspiration. Of course, I always, in the back of my mind, wanted to do it, but it was really that after my mother died, as I said, that I realized I have to sit down to tell this story.
Right.
So that's,
go ahead and finish, yeah.
So that's actually what inspired me. And I did it for the new generation, but I was really so thankful for the vision my parents had to send me here. And in fact, I dedicate my book to them for that very reason.
Right.
Because if it hadn't been for them, I wouldn't be here.
That's right. And obviously, as we'll get into, you were one of the Pedro Pan children, the 14,000 children of different ages who left Cuba. Between 1960 and 62. I mean, that's a lot of children. Just out of curiosity, when did you start calling yourself a Pedro Pan? Obviously, we use that term today quite easily. But when did you actually say to people, "Hey, I'm a Pedro Pan"? Because for a while there that really was not the word. I think they were called children, but Pedro Pan, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was in the 90s, wasn't it?
It was really in the 90s. In fact, when people would ask me about my background, when I came, how I came, I would tell them about this program of Cuban children. And I maybe a couple of times have mentioned that it was known as Operación Pedro Pan. But I really didn't call myself a Pedro Pan yet. And in fact, it was not until I would say late 90s that someone at work said to me, when do you come here from Cuba? And I said, oh, in 1962. And that person said to me, oh, you are a Pedro Pan. And I went like, oh, my God, yes, I am a Pedro Pan.
Right.
And then, of course, it was really fairly recently through social media, and I joined a group on Facebook, a Pedro Pan group, and that's when I really started to identify with the term Pedro Pan. I certainly knew about the program, and in fact talked about it a lot in my book, but we didn't really mention it by the name.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. Nobody really called themselves a Pedro Pan, certainly not back then. You were not you were not calling it Pedro Pan. But I believe, I remember I had Carmencita from the Pedro Pan group in Miami, and I had Carmencita and Maria de Los Angeles. I'm blanking out for a second, and I had them both on the show talking about Pedro Pan, and I think they mentioned also Fernando Hernandez, who's also a Pedro Pan, has written about it, and also he's written about it in his book, and I think that they talk about it in terms of Victor Trey. For a second there, I blanked out. I'm sorry, Victor, for a second there. I couldn't remember your name. But Victor wrote a book about Pedro Pan a few years back, and I think it was in the late 90s. Somebody had wrote a story in Miami, and that's where it became Pedro Pan, and now it's Pedro Pan, Pedro Pan. I think that's the story. I could be wrong. If I am wrong, forgive me, but I think it's something like that. You certainly didn't quote yourself Lorenzo Pedro Pan in the 60s or 70s or 80s. It was much later.
It was much later. You are absolutely correct.
Let's talk a little bit about what I like to do is maybe talk a little bit about your life in Cuba right before you left, and then your life in Cuba in the United States after you arrived. Let's say that 6 months sort of back, both ways. So how old were you when you left Cuba?
I left in 1962, and I was 18 years old.
So you were 18.
And as I mentioned,
so you were, yeah.
yeah.
So you were going to school in Cuba, I guess.
Right. I was living in Santiago at the time, going to the conservatory and to high school. I finished my fourth year of high school, but then that's when Fidel closed all the schools and we could not continue. So what I did during that time was continue my music studies, which for me was really great. I didn't have to go to high school and deal with math and French and all of that other stuff. I could concentrate on my music. So what actually was a wake-up call for parents, because Fidel closed all the schools and they realized that his intention was to reform the educational system, to indoctrinate the kids and all of that. And to me, it meant no school.
Right, exactly. Now, what school were you going to in Cuba? You must have been going to a Catholic school, because I was going to a Catholic school too, and they were closed. So which one were you going to?
Right. Well, at that time, when I went to Santiago, I went to a Catholic school in Antilla,
right,
where I was from. That's where I was born and where I grew up. But when I went to Santiago, I was going to a public high school and the conservatory at the same time.
Which of the Catholic schools, was it Maristas or Jesuitas, which one was it?
The Maristas.
Oh, so, yes. Okay, so you and I are Maristas. That's
yes.
Wonderful. That is wonderful.
Yes.
And obviously, I think a little different age, but nevertheless, I am delighted, always delighted to talk to somebody else who is also a Marista. So, because I don't know if you realize, I have a friend and somebody who I have not personally met yet, but who I, you know, met through social media, and he sent me some information. He and I were actually classmates in Maristas, and he sent me some pictures and some things that he had collected from Maristas, and I had a chance to see a little video that they've put together of all the places in Cuba where Maristas had representation, and I was thrilled to hear that one. You're talking about piano, the pianist Enrique Chia, the great pianist out of Miami who's selling a ton of CDs. He's also a Maristas, a few years older, maybe even a little bit older than you, but he was also a Maristas. So it's always fun for me to talk to people who are Maristas too. I have good memories of Maristas. I'm sure you remember the blue shirt and the white tie, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I certainly do. How could I forget?
How could you forget?
I know.
I relate in my own book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, I relate that my mother was a neat freak. So every morning before we took the bus, she would make sure that our tie and our shirt and we were like picture boys, you know, and then we get in the bus and we mess it all up. But
right, of course,
because we'd be in the bus playing with the boys. So your life in Cuba right before you left was obviously very much committed to music. Now, once you got to the United States, what did you do for the first 6 months or so?
Well, my brother and I came with a younger brother. He was 14, and we went to a camp in Miami, Matecumbe. We were there from April of 1962 until September of 62. And then we were sent to Kennewick, Washington, the end of the world. And it was actually a nice place, but I hadn't played the piano while I was at camp. We were living with a family in Kennewick who didn't have a piano, so, and they wanted to enroll me in high school because they figured that I should learn English, which is true, and that I needed to take certain courses in order to be eligible to go to college in Washington, in the state of Washington. And so they said, you have to do your senior year of high school here, which later I found out I really didn't have to, because kids my own age who came from Cuba went directly to the university. But I, you know, I was fine with that at the time. And I also didn't know any better. So I went ahead and did my senior year here and did extremely well, and then got a scholarship to study music at Washington State University.
Wow.
And that was So while I was living, first we lived with this family for 4 months, and then we were transferred to another family. And while I was living with the other family, I would practice in the high school where there was a music store downtown, and they would allow me to practice there as well. And then I met a music teacher who became my mentor, and I prepared to audition at three different colleges in the state, and I was accepted by all of them.
Wow.
One of them offered me the best financial deal, which was Washington State University, so I went there. And I got my bachelor's degree from Washington State, did very well. I was offered a fellowship to continue my master's after I graduated. And a week before classes started, I decided I can't stay. I have to go to New York, because if I stay here, I was a big fish in a very small pond there. Mm-hmm. And I figured if I stay here, I'll never get out. So I decided to go to New York. I didn't have a school to go to or a place to go to or anything like that. So I came to New York. With the intention that I would get my master's and go back to Washington. Well, classes had already started in New York, and I went to the Manhattan School of Music, and they would not even listen to me. But they actually, through someone that my teacher in Washington knew, I was accepted on probation. They said, "We will accept you on probation for this semester. If you do well, you will be accepted as a regular student the following semester." So that's what I did.
Right.
I went
very
to,
good. So, but you stayed in music, I guess. That's
I stayed
that's,
in music.
It's been the common denominator in your life. You know, it's been music, which is wonderful, absolutely wonderful to hear. By the way, we're talking to Lorenzo Martinez, who just published a book, and we have a link on the show information. I also put something on Facebook and will on Twitter lately later today. But it's a book called Cuba Adios, and he's talking about his departure from Cuba. He came here as a Pedro Pan, and the book just came out, so I haven't had a chance to read it. But this is kind of an introduction of Lorenzo, and then we'll have him back some other time to get more specifically about the book. But let me ask you a question that I've asked each and everyone who's written a book like this, because I thought about it a great deal when I was writing mine, and that is, how much do you still think about Cuba? Or, I mean, you've been up here all this time, I've been up here all this time, how much do you think about Cuba? How many times do you say to yourself, gee, that's where I came from, you know, I still think about Cuba? How often do you do that?
You know, I think about Cuba almost every day. There's always something that triggers a memory, whether it's food or music. I see a palm tree, and I try to compare the palm tree to the ones in Cuba. I see water, I try to compare the water with the waters in Cuba, stuff like that. Or I see pictures, and I remember exactly where the pictures were taken. And my mother was a fanatic about keeping photographs in albums. So after she died, all of that came to me. So occasionally I go through them and I remember all this stuff. I see the birthday parties that we have at
right.
home when we were children. So all of those things trigger a memory. And I tend to be very nostalgic. So I like to do that. I like to sit down and listen to a CD by Celia Cruz and look at my picture albums and remember.
Right.
So
you like doing that. You like going back and remembering. Of course, it helps a little bit that you were 18 when you left. I was 12.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
Between 12 and 18, there's a big, those 6 years between 12 and 18 will make
oh,
you
absolutely.
Remember a lot more than I would have. But I think it's marvelous that you have this great memory and that you look back at your, and it's also great that your mom kept all these pictures, because I think sometimes, I hate to say it, but sometimes some Cubans, my parents lost a bunch of pictures in Cuba that they were never able really to get out.
Right.
And that's a memory you lose. You just cannot replace replace that. Let me ask you, the book is available in the digital format, right?
Right. It's going to come out in the print form in about 2 to 3 weeks. But right now, it's only in the digital format.
Okay, very good. So we put a link on there, so anybody who wants to get the digital Kindle or whatever it's, Kindle is Amazon, I don't know what are some of the other companies call it, but it's available there, and you can download the book. Now, one last question, because you're a pianist, and this is something I have to ask you. Who is your favorite Cuban pianist, composer? I mean, give me a name or a couple of names that really stick, you know, that really jump at you.
Well, you know, Joaquin Nin was Cuban, the father of Anaïs Nin, who famous for the diaries. And I remember while I was there playing his music. And, of course, I didn't associate it with his daughter until much later when I came to this country and realized that they were related. So he was certainly a favorite Cuban composer. Of course, Lecuona, I play a lot of his music. He was not only a great composer and wrote wonderful pieces for the piano, but also songs that became soundtracks for Hollywood movies. You Are Always in My Heart and songs like that. But I also love popular music. I love Bola de Nieve. I love Olga Guillot, Celia Cruz. And I had the fortune of hearing both Celia Cruz and Olga Guillot in person in New York. So
that
to me, I actually regret that I cannot play that type of music because I was trained as a classical pianist, but I just love it. I have it in my veins. I just don't have it in my fingers.
Well, for some in the audience, I think most people in the audience probably know who Celia Cruz is. But if you don't know who Olga Guillot was, I believe the late Olga Guillot, because I think she passed away, I believe.
Yes,
she passed
yes,
away in Miami. But she was a very famous female vocalist in Cuba in the 1950s. And I'm trying to think, who would she compare with in the United States? She had a very unique style. I don't know if there's an American female vocalist that you can compare her with. But she just had a very unique style, and my parents have a couple of her albums. Just an absolutely, I'm trying to think of the song that La Gloria Eres Tú, right, is one of the songs that she, I believe, made popular, right? La Gloria Eres Tú, I believe that was one of the songs that she made popular, and a few others, I'm sure that
Miente Me Más was another one.
Which one?
Miente Me Más. Miente Me Más.
Right.
Another song that she made, very, very popular. Actually, another one that she made very popular, which used to be sung by Nat King Cole, Quizás, Quizás, Quizás. And Nat King Cole recorded a long playing at the time, and we didn't have CDs then, of Spanish songs, and he sang that, and it became very popular.
Right.
But
In fact, that album that you're talking about was also a very popular album. My parents have it. I'm sure it's available in CD, but my parents still have the LP. That album is called Ole, Cole, Ole, or Ole, Cole, you know, I think it's Ole, and then Cole. And that album was actually, much of that album was actually recorded in Havana in 1957. And then there was a
second
album they released, he released also. But the one that was the bestseller was recorded in Havana in 1957 by Nat King Cole. And I think they finished it in L.A. I was reading about this the other day. I think they finished all the recordings and all of the, you know, all the mixing and all of that in L.A. But the tracks, the vocal tracks, were put down by Nat King Cole in Cuba in 1957. We got time for one more musical favorite. Who would you name? Cuban musical favorite, who would you name? You said Bola de Nieve. Who else can you think of?
Well, Benny Moré is another one that I used to listen to a lot. Lucho Gatica, I don't know if you remember him. So those
are the
ones.
Well, I've heard the name. I'm not Benny Moré is, you know, Benny Moré is my favorite Cuban performer. Mm-hmm. So that I think everybody knows him. Lucho Gatica, I'm familiar with his voice, and but I have to confess, I'm not. I don't remember him that much. I just don't hear him that much. But one of the bands from that time that maybe you remember was Orquesta Riverside. What a fantastic group they were.
Absolutely.
Orquesta Aragon was the other one, too, from that time. Cuba had a – this is something kind of to wrap up you know, our chat, but Cuba had a tremendous – Cuban music foundation, or whatever the word is, some great musicians. I'm thinking of Orquesta Aragon, Orquesta Riverside, Benny Moré, Bolecuona, of course, International, Trio Matamoros, that's the other one. Cuba had so much music. I mean, for such a small island and a relatively small population at the time, 6, 7, 8 million people, it's amazing how much music that country put out. I'm always impressed with how much music Cuba was able to release, Lorenzo.
No, I agree. I think that Cuba is music. When I think of Cuba, I really think of music, and I think of all those rhythms that are so typical of the Cuban song. All of the Cervantes dances for the piano, for example, are full of this wonderful, intricate rhythms. And there's nothing like it anywhere else. Well, now there is this fusion, and certainly the Cuban music has influenced music everywhere.
Absolutely. No, you're exactly right. Well, we certainly recommend that people check out your book. As you say, it's coming out in print in a couple of weeks. You can go to Amazon and order the book. I'm assuming you can pre-order the print. I know they did with my book. The Kindle came later, but you could pre-order it. So I'm assuming that you could do the same thing with you, or you'll let us know through Facebook, I guess, when the book is ready.
But I believe that you can, but I will let you know.
Yeah, because I remember with our book, you were able to pre-order the Kindle before it came out. But I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you the very best with your book. You know, you were talking about Ernesto Lecuona. I kind of set you up with that question because I have a little song here from Ernesto Lecuona that I would like to close the program with, and I'm sure you're going to appreciate this one. But before I get to Lecuona, though, two other Cuban songs that are just absolutely great. Noche Cubana and La Bella Cubana.
Oh, yes.
Two absolute, and they're good for piano, too. So those are two that I think you probably enjoy playing as well. But thank you so much for joining us today, Lorenzo. The very best of success with your book. And we're going to close by listening to one of the many, many beautiful songs that Ernesto Lecuona wrote. You probably remember this one or love this one as much as I do. Lorenzo, this is called Noche Azul. So thank you, Lorenzo.
Oh,
thank you for joining me. You like this
song,
right?
Well, thank you, Silvio, Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So we're going to leave everybody with Noche Azul, one of the great, great songs of Ernesto Lecuona. And this is from a CD of Ernesto Lecuona playing the song, which is just absolutely great. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.